What the heck I gotta do to be with you?
What the heck I gotta do?
Welcome to Broadway Baby, the podcast taking one casual theater goer to full out fangirl, where today we are a podcast about musicals, talking about a musical version of a podcast. 24th Jump Street from This American Life.
You just kind of freaked my bean a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm your host, Kimberly Schmidt, here with my husband, Jay Schmidt.
Hi, guys.
And our baby, Alex Fisella.
Hello.
How are you, Alex?
I'm good. I'm a little bit still like, whoa, from that, but in a good mood. How about you guys?
Yeah, as I was doing it, I was like, oh, yeah, it's a podcast yeah. to listen to. And now I'm doing a podcast about it. And here we are.
It's a it's like a podendrome.
Yes.
Backwards and forwards.
A podduckin.
Yes.
Kind of. A man, a plan, a canal, Panama.
What?
You ever heard that one?
Yeah. No.
It's a, it was a remark made about the Panama Canal, and it's a palindrome. A man, a plan, a canal, Panama.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I'm nothing if not a font of useful information. I want to say Teddy Roosevelt said it, but I don't think that's right.
I don't know.
You know, I won't look it up.
Yeah, I don't. Don't fact check me a lot, you know?
Yeah, I try not to.
Yeah.
Except when I really do.
I will say, it's the one thing that I kind of, this is going to sound terrible.
Yeah.
But it's like the one thing I like kind of understand about Trump, because if I were president, like, if I got backed into a corner with 1,000 questions, I'd start lying, too. I'd just start lying. Like, everyone's like, he lies all the time. I'm like, yeah, he's under a lot of pressure. Like, it's just, I would do it, too. It doesn't make it right.
Yes.
And, but also, that's why I'm not president. I don't know.
Because you'd start verbal tap dancing and we'd get into a war.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. If anything, it's a scathing indictment of his presidency that I like. Because, yeah. Anyways.
Anyway, 21 Jump Street, written by Lin-Manuel Miranda and performed live at BAM for This American Life in 2014. Do we have any personal histories with this show?
I really, really was into This American Life, like in college, like when podcasts were like, not like a zygote, I was like really into, I had listened to like, I was caught up to episode 500, and that's where I kind of started picking and choosing which ones I listened to. Cause I was like, I really like talk radio, but I also like didn't have time to like tune in at the right times. And so I just got like really into it. And this episode, this is such a good one for a mini musical. Because I remember listening to this episode and being furious.
Yes.
Furious.
It's like really upsetting.
Yeah. I'll get it on a high horse about the drug war during this episode. Just you wait. I'm going to do it.
Perfect.
But I had never heard of this. I did not hear that this had happened until it was mentioned by you guys.
Oh, yeah. So I got caught up on This American Life much later when, you know, podcast was a toddler. and I remember like listening through them all, and I don't know exactly how far apart in like my listens that these were placed, maybe like a year, but I remember listening to that episode being very upset, and then maybe a year later the live at BAM was on their podcast feed, and I listened through it and I was just like, huh, that was a great idea.
Yeah.
I also loved during this episode, they made an opera out of that voiceover artist who got stuck in her closet. Do you remember that episode?
No.
A voiceover artist was recording a children's book in her hotel, so just made her closet a little voiceover studio, and got stuck and like didn't have her phone and was trying to get out. And so they made that an opera. At the same live at BAM.
That sounds amazing.
Huh. It's very good. I highly recommend.
Interesting.
Alex, what about you?
I didn't know this was a thing until I'd listened to Hamilton on Spotify about 50 plus times. And then my Spotify suggested it. And I was like, oh, what's this? An EP musical? Okay, didn't know that could even be a thing. By Lin-Manuel Miranda. And I listened to it, and I loved it. And of course, I was furious. And since then, I've done a whole lot more reading about, like, how messed up the police system is. And the drug war was always a front for racism, and just getting madder and madder every time I return to it. And so I, when I listened to it, I tweeted just for fun. I said, like, hey, at Lin-Manuel wrote a musical about a kid with a drug dealer girlfriend, and none of you told me. And he saw it and, like, quote tweeted it, like, I sure did. Everybody should get on it. And so I just got flooded with Lin stans in my mentions. But here's the thing. Lin stans are very nice people. So it was just pleasantries all the way down. It wasn't a problem at all. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. And I didn't listen to the actual podcast episode until yesterday to prepare for this. But I loved it. And I love how...
Did you watch the recording of it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I really liked it. And the cast is great. It's all people who've been... I found this after I'd seen Carousel, so I already knew who Lindsay Mendez, that she had won for being Carrie Pippridge. So, and then of course Anthony Ramos, and I think is Alex Boniello in there somewhere?
Yeah,
he is. And okay. Gerard Canonical, who was most recently in Be More Chill, and Antoine Holy. Stellar cast of five.
Yeah.
Or six, if you include Lin-Manuel.
Oh, you have to. He's part of it.
Casting himself as Ira Glass.
Oh, man, he can't help it. He can't help it. He's like, ooh, I'm going to write a thing, and I'm going to be Ira Glass. Like, yes. All right, cool, man.
I love it, and especially in that video, because he's introduced by Ira Glass, and they're dressed exactly the same.
Yes, like it's so funny.
It's like, hey, look, now I'm Ira Glass. Like, it's totally on purpose. It's great.
I wanted Ira to just do it. But that's just me liking Ira Glass's voice so much.
No, it's the funny thing about Ira Glass, and you can see, like, you can actually see in the small snippet of this, is that, like, he is very, very commanding presence on the radio. You can tell he doesn't like being in front of people.
Sure.
Like, he does a good job, but, like, you can tell he just kind of just, like, doesn't really like it. He's like the opposite of Garrison Keillor, who, like, actually the radio show's better when there's an audience.
Sure.
It's like kind of the opposite. That's why they pack those shows so hard with other people, so it's like Ira doesn't have to be the center of attention.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Lin likes being the center of attention, so he made himself Ira Glass.
Yeah. Do you want to listen to Prairie Home Companion tonight?
I've never listened to
Prairie Home Companion. Oh, I love it. Oh, I really love it. There's a picture of my sister. We went live once because they tape it in Minnesota. I don't even know if they're recording it anymore. I love radio. But there is a picture of Garrison Keillor. They held like a parade down the street. My sister was picked to be like the parade princess or whatever. And there's a picture of Garrison Keillor walking down the street holding hands with my sister. And it's very, very sweet.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really nice. That's completely unrelated to anything we're talking about.
Correct.
21 Trump Street. Sorry, I just went down a little mental, I went on a tangent.
It is very, very quick side tangent. Am I wrong for thinking that could also be a really good premise for a horror movie? Like, you're the parade princess now.
Yeah.
It's like a little Midsommar kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. Isn't one of them like the clam queen?
I think it's hilarious that you assume that either of us have seen I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
I don't understand why you didn't. You know, I wasn't, guy with like the ice pick hand. Or maybe it was I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Because I wasn't a 14-year-old girl when that movie came out.
Great.
I don't think I was, but
I loved a late 90s horror film that was mostly also a rom-com.
That we're all just coasting on that Scream is actually a really good movie.
I love Scream so much.
Anyways.
Anyway, many, many tangents for 21 Jump Street, a 14-minute musical. That was a lot of fun.
That I've been humming around the house. It's actually really catchy. A lot of, like, the songs are really fun. It, like, it knows exactly what it's doing. It doesn't try and do too much. It's just, like, real quick.
Yeah. It was probably, like, a fun little writing exercise / break from writing Hamilton in 2014.
Yeah.
to just be like, oh, well, let's just do this. It's basically written. Yeah. Here's some music.
I love to see the little jaunts that Lin has made whenever he writes musical theater songs for just another thing. Like, do either of you guys watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
No,
it makes me very anxious.
Okay, I don't watch it either, but my coworker showed me because Lin was in the two-part finale, and they were doing basically Satanic Verses, the musical, which is the book that got Salman Rushdie in a huge amount of trouble.
Yeah.
And he wrote it because it sounds so much like a Lin-Manuel song. A song from the musical that they perform in the rehearsal. It's a legitimately good song. It's called I Do Not Like This Man. That's Salman Rushdie and the leader of some Islamist country, like just talking shit about each other in their two respective places. It's a really, really great song.
Yeah. Lin doesn't, tangents. He doesn't half-ass it.
Yeah.
Which I think this is the kind of thing you could half-ass. Like, what I appreciate about Lin-Manuel is that he does not, there are certain projects that I would not blame him or be upset for him kind of just like, you know, showing up to work that day and busting out a thing and it not being the best thing he's ever done, but they're all just really good.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell that he, like, with this, like, there were some late nights with this that didn't need to be late nights, but were better for it.
Okay, that makes sense. I wonder how long this took to write.
I don't know. The Wikipedia did not tell me much. Sorry. What it did tell me and remind me is that this has always been a fun little musical nod, because the original story was titled What I Did for Love.
Yeah.
Which, as we know, is the song from A Chorus Line.
Oh, okay.
So I just think it's very funny that, like, it was named at, like, it was a, like, nod to musical theater to begin with. Just the title of the thing.
Yeah. This is one of those stories, and I don't want this to sound like too much of a positive, but it's like being gifted this story that happened in real life and, like, here's, like, make a musical out of this. It's already so fraught and has, like, waves and, like, it has a three-act structure in and of itself. And not that, I'm not going to say that it was worth it happening to get this. Obviously not. But if you need to do a journalistic musical, you could not ask for a better story arc than this.
And that the assignment was make it 14 minutes long.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
It's like, oh, okay.
And also,
I don't have to add in a bunch of extraneous characters and, like, weird side plots to make it 2 hours.
And you can tell a lot of the, like, main pushes for lyrics are things that people actually said in their interviews.
Yeah.
Like, what do I got to do to be with you? Like, that's right from the actual interview.
Yeah.
And
what the heck did you do?
Her song, I can't remember what the, like, the main...
Seriously, these kids need to learn there are consequences.
That's right from the interview.
Yeah.
Like, it's all
it's like Come From Away.
It's actually this little snippet is like a really good example of like how to write something well quickly.
Yeah.
And like how to, especially
if it's based on something.
And how honoring the source material can both help your writing process, but also like make it a little easier. But you just got to do your due diligence with it.
I'm now trying to think of all of the musicals that have been based on documentaries.
Journalism. Hands on a Hard Body?
Hands on a Hard Body.
I loved Hands on a Hard Body. I stand by it. Me and my mom went and we had a great time. Hunter Foster was awesome. It was a great show.
Yeah. Grey Gardens.
Oh, yeah.
Also, like, stuff ripped right from... They basically just, like, put music under one of her monologues.
Yeah.
And were like, talk about the skirt you're wearing. Like, Come From Away.
Yeah.
Based on a book and a series of interviews. And I think there was a short documentary about it as well.
I guess The Band's Visit. No, that's a movie.
No, that's an actual movie.
Yeah, it's a narrative.
I can't think of much more off the top of my head, but
yeah,
I'm sure more exist.
Yeah.
But also from that list, I think it's a pretty...
I mean, those are all great shows, so it does go to show that, like, taking source material that is not necessarily a book or a movie
yeah.
can be very successful, especially because you really get to the humanity of each character because you have actual words that they've said.
Yeah.
You could also argue that a chorus line kind of based on...
Yeah.
Just because he took actual interviews.
Yeah, it was based on a documentary that never got made.
It was based on a documentary that he made on purpose to make a musical.
Yeah. I don't think you could say Chorus Line is based on a documentary. I think Chorus Line is a documentary.
Yeah. Yes. That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah. It was interesting. Yeah. It was interesting listening to the musical first and then the This American Life episode.
That's because, interesting, yeah.
Yeah, just because by weird chance, I got around to the podcast episode much later. And it was interesting because, like we said, the story is all there, and you can see, it's interesting to see where he embellishes, because he gives the cop a little bit of a tragic backstory, and then shows that she has some guilt, where I listened to the episode, and that woman clearly don't give a shit. She's happy about it. She is a monster. And she's arguably still a monster in this, especially, like I said, because... The drug war is bullshit entirely, and she's entrapping this kid and then going, well, I'm keeping them safe. I'm like, no, you're an awful human being.
Yeah.
It was not a good look for her.
No. Yeah. yeah. Like, you... I mean, it's the kind of thing where, you know, every documentary has... There's two sides to every story, but I think this one is pretty cut and dry.
Yeah.
Like, it's... And I think Lynn does a good job of of fleshing her out a little bit more, but also it's pretty clear... That like, no, you just like, you're a 25-year-old cop who doesn't totally know what she's doing, and you found an easy mark, and you hadn't, and you took advantage of it.
Oh, I never thought of it that way—that she didn't know what she was doing and found.
She's only 25 years old, man. Yeah. She had to be.
Was a new recruit.
She was fresh on the job. She had to look young enough to be a high school student.
Yeah,
like it's like I firmly, it's not outright said or even alluded to, but I was just like. Oh, like you just like were in over your head and you needed to show some results, and this was the only kid paying attention to you, and so you just kind of ruined his life.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's interesting because like, you know, it's easy if you don't know a whole lot about how the police structure works, like it's easy to go, oh, that's really messed up. That must be an isolated incident. But listeners, I would recommend you, there's an essay called Confessions of a Former Bastard Cop that explains how this stuff is de rigueur. It is normal, these kinds of things, these really sadistic things that go on, and when they get caught like and held accountable, those are the outlying incidents, the ones we know about. So it's really scary.
Yeah, those are the exception to the rule.
Yeah, the ones that we end up finding out about. And you know, I think you're right that she probably, I don't know if in real life that's how it went, but clearly in the story, I think you're right, it's implied that it's like, oh, I'm trying to prove myself. And that mindset, and that's why I thought of it, is like, that's a mindset that is real among police officers of like, I got to get my quota kind of a thing. And that leads to lives being ruined, literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not cute.
This is concluded by
highlight. But it makes for a good musical because there's conflict.
Yeah. And it is interesting, even though it's pretty clearly one-sided of who's right. It is interesting that it is kind of playing the game of like, they both remember it differently. And you know that one is remembering it more trustworthily, that's a word, than the other one. But it is interesting that she goes, I didn't say yes. And he goes, she said yes, because that's just how, you know, human memory works. And it's an interesting, it's never not interesting when a show will kind of play with that.
Oh, yeah.
But at the end of the day, he may very well have been 18 and legally an adult, but he was still a high school student. And
he was a child. She took advantage of a child, basically, for all intents and purposes.
Like, a high school aged, or an 18-year-old boy is...
And a hot girl asks for something, I'll find it, it's okay.
Like, the math is not that hard to do. Like, it's...
It's as close as we can get to the movie Minority Report.
Yeah.
Of having precogs that'll...
Boys don't get smart until, like, 25.
Yeah.
We're dumb. We're dumb for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm glad we met after I was 25.
Yeah. I was not yet 25.
I know.
That's close. Was it? Was it 24?
Have we been together that long?
Yeah.
I forget how long
we started dating right after I turned 24.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good for me.
If you believe in love.
Yeah, 7 years.
What the heck you gotta do?
Cause she's turning 24.
That song is like crazy catchy.
Yeah.
The cousin song is fun,
but a little chaotic.
But a little, my biggest gripe with the production is that I think it's a little actually over choreographed.
Yeah.
In that I think they were like, they started staging it and they were like, man, we have three other people on stage that have nothing to do for like 12 minutes of this 14 minutes. What are we going to do with them? I guess we'll make them dance. And you've got guys literally sprinting around the stage while having to sing this song. And I was like, man, I feel bad for those guys.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no way they're going to sound good with all the amount of running around they got to do.
Yeah.
How much running got to do?
Yeah. Sing this song.
Lots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we have any for this mini episode? Any mini loves?
I do. I've got a few. One is the line that, so two of these I've already sang, which is interesting
that
the show's so small. The seriously, these kids need to learn that. That's a really good melody.
Yeah.
And I love.
I can also just listen to Lindsay Mendez sing the phone book.
Exactly. Yeah.
Her voice is so cool.
Yeah. I love the love only if you believe in love, mainly because that guitar kicks in and it is like, you can just feel that the lighter should be coming out, you know?
Yeah.
Very, very like power ballad and I love it.
Yeah.
And then I love LOLOLOL and ROFLOL. Like,
that yeah,
those are funny. Text.
Yeah.
My little loves. And this flies in the face of what I just said. In that there are some of the choreography, there are some small fun little moments, like when they all like turn the page at the same time, which is, it's not really that inventive. It's more that I appreciate the meta-ness of that rehearsal process, because I know that they probably rehearsed this like over the course of like a day and a half. And when they were doing that, it's the kind of thing where it's like, that's actually like kind of hard to make sure everyone does that at the same time. Mm-hmm. But it's fun to like be in the room with like a bunch of professional like performers that I'm like, it's actually like a pretty complicated thing, but I'm sure everyone like got it like pretty quickly. And that's like a fun feeling when everyone just goes, oh, and then we're turning the page and they're like, oh, we're all doing it at the same time. Okay, we'll figure it out. And then I don't know. I just like kind of like saw behind like four screens with that move in a way that I really enjoyed. Cause I was like, yeah, they had to learn that really quick. And it probably what actually was pretty easy for them to do, but like it shouldn't be. I want the shirt with the Super Mario Star on it. I want that shirt. I feel like I should have that shirt. But then I started thinking it's green and I want to wear that shirt on previewed, but it's green and it'll make me blend into the green screen.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah. Also, I just like when Mendez, the quality of her voice,
mm-hmm.
and this sounds like a dig, but it's not. It, when she sings, you almost forget she's singing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it just,
that's
feels,
why I like her voice so
it
much.
Feels so natural and like conversational that like it just, you forget that she's singing. It just kind of feels like she's just communicating so effectively. Yeah.
It feels like elevated speech, like
kind of, yeah, and then
musical speech
in a good way. It's like very, yeah. It's like a nice warm blanket. Feels good.
I know her placement is always perfect.
Yeah,
you're never concerned that she's like dipping in or out of tune because she's just like talk riffing singing like.
Because
I highly recommend watching a video I've watched about 1,000 times from 2007.
Okay.
It is the Song of the Dead Fairy from at Joe's Pub at a Ryan Scott Oliver concert. And she just, I don't know. It was my introduction to her, was that video on YouTube in college.
Huh.
And I was obsessed with it because she wails. And then she literally, like, there's a key change where, like, they start singing the chorus again. And she says, no, cuts everyone off, and then changes the key.
Wow.
And it's really fun. I'll make you watch it in a minute. My little loves of this was the direction and the choreography too, because I love a song that ends with sitting down. I don't know why.
I just loved
every time the song ended with like Anthony sitting in the chair and like ready to talk again.
It's
like
a good
going
button.
Back to like narrating.
Yeah.
It's a good button. And then a light change. I liked it. That's that. And then Lindsay Mendez also, her outfit specifically was just like a very high school outfit, especially of the time.
And it felt like
2011.
It also felt like a 25-year-old dressing like a, it had a very 100%. Never been kissed kind of vibe.
Like, oh, you're wearing hot pink sweatpants? Okay.
Nah.
Are we all familiar with the meme of Steve Buscemi? Like, hello, fellow kid.
Yeah.
Very that.
Holding the skateboard.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, fellow young people.
Yes.
I am familiar with that. Interesting. Any other mini loves?
Another mini love. I got a text from my Aunt Ashley, who wanted me to tell you both that she has swiped something from the show. She's teaching an 8th grade English class on Zoom as a teacher, and she is part of the discussion topics of the book they're reading. She is asking them for their little loves about the book they're reading.
Oh,
she wanted me to tell you that.
That's great.
She's probably listening right now, and you're the best, Ashley.
Thank you.
I hope there are no undercover cops in your 8th grade class.
Yes.
Yeah,
because they'd be way too young to be cops.
Yeah, and Ashley, if you see any cops in your class, don't let them ruin any kids' lives, please.
Yeah, we call those heralds.
Yeah. Any other lovesies?
I love that they give the officer playing Naomi basically like an Aaron Burr, the world was wide enough moment where she gets this kind of quiet spotlight on her. Like, there are kids you remember. Like,
yeah.
To imply that much regret. And it's really, really cool. And again, the real woman clearly feels nothing. But the character,
is. Yeah, that's the joy of musical theater. You try and make people a little more likable.
Well, that's good storytelling. You got to make you got to make all of your characters compelling, even your villains.
Yeah, and Lynn was writing this at a time where he was perfecting that with Aaron Burr. So he probably did it.
Yeah.
He was very good at it when he was doing this.
And it's interesting because she is like, well, she basically says, I get to do this because my family got messed up by drugs. But
yeah, I don't like that excuse.
I don't like that excuse either. And it's not just because it smells like, that's not good enough, though, because you could become a counselor or something. It's also like, well, okay, but there's so much knowledge out there available that you could see that the drugs are a symptom of the system, like, you know,
but also like
people economically, and that it's not their fault, and it's, you know what I mean?
And you don't get to put your personal history onto every single other person in the world.
Yeah.
And ruin their life.
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, I know what drugs do, and so if you've even seen it, like.
Yeah, I must say, I don't know if I hate any character in musical theater, at least at this moment, more than I hate Naomi. Not in terms of how she's written. I mean, just as a human being. Like,
yeah.
I have an anger for this woman that I haven't felt in a long time for any musical theater characters. Because, like Jay is fond of saying, a musical is so much fun that oftentimes by the end of the show, you even kind of like the villain because they're part of the fun. And I'm just like, yeah but fuck her. I really so mad. And I think also that's because she's real and out there somewhere, but still.
That also helps I've heard the real interview with this woman where she is rude. You know, what would Harold do if he stumbled into BAM one night and saw a bunch of musicalized radio episodes?
This isn't Prairie Home Companion.
Exactly. Exactly what he'd say. Where's Garrison? Where is he? No, I honestly think his wife would shut him down pretty quickly because they probably paid a lot of money to be at BAM to see This American Life live because those tickets are not cheap. And so... not that Broadway's ever cheap, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Plus it's what, 14 minutes? Does his phone have time to ring?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm just saying there is a window where the musical may be short enough that we can outrun the natural life cycle of his phone.
I will say this. I appreciate that we have stuck to this this convention of Harold, but this metaphor has been breaking down for months.
Oh, I'm the only one that takes it seriously. I fully acknowledge that.
It's just like, this is, you know, it's a fun little convention. I don't want to get rid of it. I don't want to stop doing it. But it's hilarious to me that every time we get to it, it's just kind of, I'm kind of like, yeah, this doesn't map anymore, but we're just going to keep soldiering on.
Yeah. We've also stopped. We haven't done something that we haven't liked in a while.
Yeah, that's true.
So
yeah.
We haven't been able to say, like, let it rain. I don't know. Cancel. Yeah. That's mostly that. Well, that's been a mini episode. Was that mini enough, or did we talk longer than we should?
I think it's probably just fine.
Yeah.
Louise, are you ready? Sing out, Louise.
The plan was called Operation Hammerstein.
Oh, no.
A 33-year-old man named Alex Fasella. That's me, a comedian who loves to learn. I taught myself Dutch. I can't really speak it, but I can kind of read it a little bit. Realized his hatred of musical theater was a cover for being sad that he'd never actually done it. Alex could hardly believe his luck when two theater nerds entered his life. Kimberly. One was already an established theater podcaster. Kimberly. He followed them on Twitter. They followed back. Kimberly. And of course, her husband. He's Jay Schmidt. Alex, what drew you to the Schmidts? Oh, you could tell they love theater a lot, but hate it just a little bit. They were very funny, sweet married couple, big laughs, mature with the knowledge like, hey. And they could teach me how to get to Broadway. They said they moved from Jersey and Missouri to New York, where Broadway's made. Well, so did I. So I subscribed, and I tweeted at them every day for like a month, and I was like, what the heck I gotta do to pod with you? LOL. What the heck I gotta do to pod with you? Several gifts of Lin-Manuel. Who do I have to be a Broadway baby? The undercover officers playing Kimberly and Jay had a different view of the situation. We didn't say we could get them on Broadway or even in musicals, but we can confirm we were asked to do a podcast. The officers had been sent to honeypot Alex into doing a theater podcast, mainly to teach him that if he really wanted to be in musicals, he shouldn't have been snotty about them for the past 30 years, and he would soon learn the gravity of his lifelong amalgamation of mistakes. Seriously, this kid needs to learn there are consequences in life. If we're doing our job and we're doing them right, we'll make Broadway safer one pod at a time. But what did you actually tell him? We said, well, think about it. Go think about it. Think about it. Yes! But
what the heck did you do?
Very good.
Well done.
I agonized over what to call the operation. I was like, Operation Sondheim? Operation Doe a Deer?
I like Doe a Deer.
I almost went with that, but I figured
Operation Lonely Goat Herd.